The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Bonjour, hi, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, but I'm not there. I'm actually in the Latin Quarter. Actually, I'm at Versailles when this radio show comes on. The Sun King and I are in Versailles. And so Kurt Schlichter is here, and I have nominated Kurt to be the middle square in my new promoted idea of the Hollywood Squares Meet the Red Wedding. So playing the role of Paul Lynn will be Kurt Schlichter in my new takeoff. Take it away, Kurt.
Thank you, Hugh Hewitt. I am the Paul Lynn of conservative talk radio. I am Kurt Schlichter, senior columnist at townhall.com, noted Los Angeles trial lawyer, retired United States Army colonel, author of the Kelly Turnbull series of action-packed, liberal-bashing, conservative action novels. Hence the action-packed part. Also, and I'm going to be following up on this theme because my publisher may then release my family. You've got to pre-order my upcoming book. It's coming out in July. It's called We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America. If you want to talk about the possibility of civil war, national divorce, population bottoming out, chaos, and a message of hope, get We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America. You can pre-order it at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever fine books are sold, as well as my books. Guys, there's so much to talk about today on the Hugh Hewitt radio program, and I want to talk to you about it. 800-520-1234. Give me a call, 800-520-1234. We have great guests, sure. But you guys, the listeners, you are the stars. 800-520-1234. Let's run down the news. Ron DeSantis versus the groomer mouse in Florida. Ron DeSantis is as good as his word. He's taking it to woke Disney and making them pay. And a lot of our conservative friends, a lot of folks that, you know, we like, have some doubts about whether Ron DeSantis should be using political power against a corporation that uses its business and economic power against us, the conservative base. My answer, oh, hell yeah. Oh, yeah. What did Ron DeSantis do? Well, Disney's got a sweet deal in Florida. Disney has a special carve out called the Reedy Creek Development District, which essentially allows it to become the government around Disney, where it can handle zoning and municipal functions like police and fire. It really allows it to be a government unto itself, a mouseocracy, as it were. And Ron DeSantis said, well, you know, that's a bad idea. And I think the best time to handle it is right after Disney comes out and tries to fight us on our anti-grooming legislation. As you know, Ron DeSantis pioneered in Florida a law that prohibits weirdos, losers, and mutations masquerading as teachers from talking about sex to little tiny kids. Now, I think all normal people can agree that weirdos, losers, and mutations masquerading as teachers and everyone else should never, ever, under any circumstances, talk about sex to little kids. I'm going to give you a complete list of all the times it's appropriate for strangers to talk about sex with little kids. Are you ready? Here you go. That windswept plane with a tumbleweed going across, that means nothing. There is literally no time when any adult should talk about sex to little kids. And Ron DeSantis simply put it into law. And Disney freaked out because of the pierced and green-haired weirdos on its staff. You're breaking my heart. You can't stop us. Don't say gay. All right. Normal gay people are like, no, we agree. You shouldn't be talking about sex to little kids. That's not what we're about. We're with you. So Disney picked a fight. And that's a problem. A lot of woke corporations have picked fights with us in the cultural space, and they don't hesitate to use their power. Okay? They have economic power. But somehow, according to many, and we'll be talking about it later with some of our guests, according to many folks in the conservative sphere, well, we can't use political power against a corporation. Corporations can do what they want, and we have to stand back and continue to give them enormous benefits like the Reedy Creek Redevelopment District because reasons and also principles. Let me tell you about my conservative principle, folks. Are you guys ready? I think you ought to get out a notepad if you, write for the Bulwark or your David French or one of those other insipid sissies who has never met a victory they didn't want to, flush down the toilet. Because for some reason, these guys don't want to win. Are you ready to take down my conservative principle? Here you go. My conservative principle is anything that makes me less free is not a conservative principle. That's right. I could be oppressed by the government. I could also be oppressed by a giant faceless corporation leveraging its power to inflict the social and cultural views of the CEO's 30-year-old second wife upon the rest of us. I'm just not going to put up with that. And the way I will manifest my power, the way we as conservatives will manifest our power, is through politics. They get to use their business power, and they can do it. But we could do it, too. There's no arbitrary rules that require we lose. David French is wrong. Jonah Goldberg is wrong. Everybody is wrong if they think that we should be forced to submit to the whims of woke corporations. We're just not going to do that. This is why you lose. This is how you get Trump. Now, I've got to the show has a good friend in what I have argued many times, and I argue in my book, The Fall and Rise. We'll be back, The Fall and Rise of America, which you should go pre-order right now. The Fall and Rise of America will be back. I have argued that Robert C. O'Brien, friend of the show, was the best national security advisor since the national security advisor became a thing, and I believe in the late 40s. I mean, he was great. I mean, he comes out, solves the Kosovo-Serbia problem when I served over in Kosovo. So that personal to me. Solved the Middle East thing. I also served in the Middle East. Also personal to me. Did a lot of great things. And just great. But I've got to tell you, the last 24 hours have been a reign of terror by Robert C. O'Brien. First of all, he is denying the people of Utah, who are crying out for him to run for governor against the pronoun-spewing, woke, pseudo-Republican currently inhabiting that office. He refuses to run for governor. So selfish, Robert. So selfish. But as hostage negotiator, before he became America's greatest national security advisor, as hostage negotiator, he got out of, I believe, Switzerland or Norway or one of those Viking places, some place with horns on their helmets that eat herring and are sad all the time. He got an American hostage out. He wasn't really a hostage. He was, kind of a criminal. His name was ASAP Rocky. ASAP, the S being the dollar sign, because, yes, he's a rapper. And yesterday, ASAP Rocky was arrested at Los Angeles International Airport for shooting a dude. This is all Robert's fault. This is all Robert C. O'Brien's fault. This reign of terror by Robert C. O'Brien must stop. And it gets worse. It gets worse, folks. He's on stage at the Nixon Library with Sean Penn, who had gone to Ukraine. And let's listen to what went down on this panel. Brett Baer's there. Robert C. O'Brien's there. Here's what Sean Penn said. Cut and everybody.
I just heard from Robert O'Brien. He said, get the f*** out.
Did you hear that, folks? Sean Penn, minding his own business in Ukraine. Russians are invading. Gets a call from Robert O'Brien. Robert O'Brien says, hey, you need to get the blankety blank out. Robert C. O'Brien's reign of terror continues. And your calls. I need your calls. 1-800-520-1234. We can talk about Robert O'Brien. We can talk about Ron DeSantis. We can talk about lots of people whose first names begin with R. Right here on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. By the way, yesterday was 4/20. For some people, that refers to marijuana. And Nikki Fried, who's running against DeSantis in Florida, she tweets out, she's like in a marijuana farm, right? She's got like a pot leaf, and she's like, I will legalize pot when I win the election. You're running against Ron DeSantis on a pro-drug that makes you dumber and less interesting platform. You think you're going to win? You will win nothing. I'm Kurt Schlichter. This is Hugh Hewitt radio program. We have so much more. We're back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. That's the Soft Boys with I Want to Destroy You, a potent theme for this segment, where in just a moment we'll be talking to ex-Green Beret Jim Hansen. But first, Mike in Lakewood, California, I want to ask you, what do you think about Donald Trump? You're going to give the counterpoint to our last caller.
Understand these people who despite all of the factors that they talk about, why can't he have a second term and then Pompeo or DeSantis? You know, with the damage this guy is doing to this country, we could have the next 16, 20 years in consecutive order with these fine people that we have.
Well, thank you, Mike, in Lakewood, California. See, now you see the dichotomy. It's Godzilla versus Gamera. I don't know if Trump is Godzilla. I don't know if DeSantis is Gamera. It's not for me to judge. I'm not the kaiju ref. Don't put that heat on me, folks. I'm just a simple author of We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America, which you should go pre-order right now. And if I mention that enough during the next 3 hours, my publisher will release my family. So anyway, let's jump right in with my pal, Jim Hansen, fellow Army veteran. Jim, how you doing? Great connection, Jim. You got your comms. Your comms are all twisted. Your comms are in a bunch. You're a soup sandwich, buddy. Holy cow. Well, while I'm here, let me get Frank in San Diego. Frank, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt radio program.
Yeah, I think that we're going to have a public health emergency for the midterms, and Biden will be discarded along with Kamala like a bad cards in a poker hand.
Well, thank you, Frank. Yes, she. I think the Democrats are going to fold on Krusty Joe and Kooky Kamala. Jim Hansen, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt radio program. Despite the NSA attempting to stop our communication,
brother,
are you there, Jim? Jim. Jim, this is troubling. Are we being, I'm not saying it's a conspiracy. I'm not saying that powerful forces are trying to silence the insights that Jim Hansen, former Green Beret and president of Security Studies Group, is attempting to lay down on you. But I don't think there's any other rational explanation. While we're waiting, Fred in Martinez. What say you? Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, Fred. I was teasing. Jim, are you there?
Is there any chance we're going to talk, brother?
Well, if your phone ever works, sure.
Between us, I'm not sure which one of us is on the worst list with the powers that be.
Well, I don't know. But like I said, I'm not saying it's a conspiracy, but there is no other explanation. Jim, you are as a former Green Beret Special Forces guy. Everybody thinks you're a bunch of crazy, wacky, door-kicking SEAL guys, but you're not. You're all about insurgency. You're all about thinking through stuff and strategy. What do you think of Ron DeSantis' strategy of leveraging our political power as Republicans against woke corporations that don't hesitate to leverage their economic power against us for the benefit of weirdos, losers, mutations, and groomers?
I think if he had not punched back at Disney, it would have emboldened every woke corporation that wants to try and turn this country into some kind of deranged Tommy Crapple. So it was vital. And I think the people who think it's wrong don't want to win. They want to be invited to the all-powerful cocktail parties.
Well,
they got to learn. They're trying to kill us. If we fight back, we can win. If we don't, they're going to take us out.
Well, Jim Hansen, I won't say I was surprised, because, you know, you and I have and folks like us have been doing battle against kind of the sissy cons, for lack of a better word, who suddenly discover principles whenever we're on the verge of winning. Here's my principle, and I shared it with our folks a little earlier, but I'll share it with you. My principle is I have no conservative principles that require me to be less free. There we go.
I refuse to not fight when they pick a fight. It's not like Ron DeSantis woke up one morning and he said, "What can I do to screw Disney over?" No, Disney decided to oppose the will of four Florida's voters, and Ron DeSantis looked and said, "Aren't we giving them the greatest break of any corporation in the entire country? Maybe we should relook that." And the Florida legislature is relooking that.
And in fact, the Senate, in fact, the Senate voted to end the or at least reform the Reedy Creek Development District, which was essentially a sovereignty giveaway to Disney. Now, there may be a good reason to do that, but apparently the representatives of the people of Florida no longer think so. And the problem for some of the conservatives who are now saying, you know what, you know, here's the conservative case for corporate giveaways. Apparently, Disney can do whatever it wants to influence our culture. We're not allowed to use our power at all to push back. I just don't buy it.
And you shouldn't buy it. And the nice thing is Ron DeSantis and the leadership in Florida don't buy it. And they're leading the way. The nice thing about what they're doing is all of these things that get all the panties here in D.C. where I am in WAD are just, they mean nothing to him. And he goes ahead and he says, these are the principles that are going to let us win this fight. And those are the principles that matter to me. And that principle is kicking the crap out of people who are doing horrible things to us. And I hope he never stops.
What strikes me, Jim Hansen, is how terrified these guys are whenever we seem to be winning. You know, suddenly it's like, well, Donald Trump's, you know, the president. You know, he's talking about issues the base likes. We that's not who we are. And then suddenly, you know, where Ron DeSantis is fighting about, well, we can't possibly leverage our power against the people, shamelessly and ruthlessly leveraging theirs against us for the benefit, might I add, of a minority of their employees, the blue-haired, pierced weirdos who demanded that the CEO act. You know, it's not the norm. It's not like the parking attendants going, you know, I think we need a lot more grooming in Florida schools.
Well, and these people, they call themselves conservatives, and they share some values with us. The value they don't share is the possession of a fully intact and working spine. And I think we need to point out that there are more of us than there are of them. They simply have had the seats where people supposedly listen to them for too long. And I think that's one of the things Trump kicked away. And that's one of the things DeSantis is proving, is that the actual people, the people who live conservative values, are the ones who are now in charge. And we're not going to take this crap from the crazies anymore.
Well, exactly, Jim Hansen. Look, the American people have an agenda that doesn't match, and this is not a new phenomenon, it doesn't match the one of the people in Washington. We want the border shut. We don't want perverts in schools chatting up our kids. Okay? And the guys in Washington, the conservatives in Washington, they're like, well, you know, those aren't important. We're another giant corporate tax cut. I just find it amazing that these people never seem to learn. And then they're stunned that Trump comes along. You know, America wasn't going, you know what we need? TV guy who of a vaguely orange hue. That would be great. No, they were like, I want a guy who's going to aggressively fight on the issues I care about. He was the one guy out of 17. The one guy out of 17 candidates for the Republican nomination in 2016 who actually talked about the issues. People were interested. And shocking, Jim, he won.
Well, and now the people in the Latino community, the yes. people in the Black community, and the rest of America as well, have all looked at what Democrat rule is. And it's no security, no prosperity, and the government telling you how to live your life in a bad, stupid, and evil way. And they're flocking now in droves to our banner, not yeah. the banner of the sissy con cruise ship Republicans, the banner of people who believe America first is a real thing. And I think it's a beautiful thing, and I think this is going to be a fun election come the fall.
Oh, I think it is, too. Now, we have had two calls today here on the Hugh Hewitt radio program, 800-520-1234. We've had two calls. We had one gentleman say, I want Ron DeSantis. Trump's sell-by date is hit. And another guy saying, well, you know, Trump deserves another term. That's going to be the conflict. I want a primary. I want Godzilla versus Gamera. I'm not saying Trump is Gamera or Godzilla. That's for other people to decide. But I want the primary. What do you think?
I think it's a great idea because we do not coronate. We do not believe yes. in royalty. We are the meritocracy in this country. And so let's have the best, you know, standard bearers on our team fight it out. If Trump wins, I'll back him to the hilt.
Bingo.
If DeSantis wins, I don't care. I don't care. I will vote for any Republican over a Democrat because the Democrat Party is run by people trying to fundamentally transform us into a socialist loser state. Well, we're not going to allow that. So let's pick the best one. And let's win.
Well, Jim Hansen, as a Green Beret and as an infantry first sergeant, you know training. And you know the principle that you bleed in training so you don't bleed on the battlefield. I think a primary is good for a guy like Trump because it will sharpen him, hone him. I think he's getting a little flabby. Not physically. Looks great physically. But in terms of getting out there and making his case. We got about 15 seconds left. What do you think of my theory?
I think he's been in a bubble for a while. Everybody, you know, around him has been telling him what he wants to hear. It might be time for him to get out and have to take on some antagonistic ideas and see, you know, how he reacts to that. So, yeah, I'm with you, brother.
Oh, Jim Hansen, president of the Security Studies Group, author of Winning the Next Civil War Without Firing a Shot, which you should go get, along with my book. We'll be back.
I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172.
Soldiers from the sky.
We're back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter, senior columnist at townhall.com. I am the author of the new book, We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America, which you should go pre-order right now. We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America. I'm also a retired United States Army colonel, and I'm very proud to welcome to the Hugh Hewitt radio program a regular Dr. Michael Oren, former ambassador to the United States from the State of Israel, and a paratrooper himself. Dr. Oren, welcome.
Welcome. I'm laughing because I don't think I ever jumped out of an airplane. I think I was pushed a great number of times, though.
I jumped out five times. I got the badge, and that accomplished exactly what I needed tactically, which was getting dates.
You know, in Israel, we never jump during the day, and you jump with this about 200 pounds of equipment. And there's two large gentlemen on either side of the door saying, you know, after you. No, after you.
I remember one poor gentleman, some poor private, stopped the door and said, I'm not going. And Sergeant Airborne picked him up and threw him out, doing it. I'm sure he got his badge. Biggest favor anyone ever did to him.
Great to be with you.
Great to have you. And first, you know, here on the Hugh Hewitt radio program, we watch Israeli politics like some people watch sports. And some people meaning, of course, Hugh Hewitt watching sports.
Contact sports, yes.
What is the status of the present coalition in Israel?
Very, very shaky. After the defection of one member of the coalition, actually the secretary of the coalition, we're down to the basically a tie between the opposition and the coalition, which means no legislation can be passed. And one of the key members of the coalition is a Arab Islamic purist party that is taking strong objection to Israel's security measures to secure the Western Wall and the Temple Mount from Palestinian rioters. And so they have basically the Arab Islamic Purist Party has frozen its participation in the government, which means the government has less than a majority it needs to remain in power.
The whole thing's baffling, and all I can think of is the Italians saying, thank goodness for the Israelis, because someone has a crazier political system than we do.
And we should say that about the Italians. Thank God for the Italians.
But then I look at Washington, and I'm like, eh, maybe I'm not one to talk. I'm very concerned about the relationship with Israel and the United States in the Biden era. How do you characterize it, and how can we move forward? And of course, how does Israel handle the fact that there are people in the Biden administration who actively despise the Jewish state?
Well, at the risk of sounding tautological here, the Biden administration is not the Obama administration, and it's neither the Trump administration. For example, the Iran nuclear deal. I mean, nobody in the Biden administration says what Obama used to say, that it's going to block Iran's path to the bomb. Nobody says that. Nobody says that the deal is going to make Iran into a responsible regional power. Nobody says that anymore. You may ask the question, but why the heck are they going for this deal? Now, because their party wants it. The party has elevated the Iran nuclear deal into something like the Holy Grail. It's become iconic. And if you're a Democrat, you got to support it. And it's for us, it's completely baffling. And very, very scary. On the Palestinian issue, it's mostly just rhetoric, to tell you the truth. There's nothing you can do. The Palestinians don't really have a leadership. The Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas, is 85 years old. He's a three-pack-a-day guy. He's going into the – I think he's 16 or 17 years into his four-year term because he won't stand for re-election. He just doesn't have the power or the ability or the will to negotiate. So, you know, the administration is going to make noises critical of Israeli policy. There was just a joint statement put out by Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, with Jordan's foreign minister that was blistering in his condemnation of our police efforts to protect Jewish citizens in the state of Israel. I got also to protect Palestinians. There are hundreds of Palestinian kids throwing stones up on the Temple Mount. Palestinians, what would the American police do in that situation, I wonder? So, you know, it's mostly rhetoric. It's uncomfortable. The main issue is the Iran nuclear deal. Right now, those talks are stalled, and frankly, I'm delighted.
Dr. Oren, let's put your soldier helmet on for a second. In 1973, the Egyptians made a surprise attack across the Suez Canal, moved into the Sinai Peninsula, established positions. The Israelis, aggressive, used their armor to counterattack and found themselves under attack with anti-tank missiles in a way no one had ever been attacked before. A lot of people said, hey, this is the end of tanks. It wasn't the end of tanks. Let's move forward to Ukraine, what we're seeing there. Light infantry with man-portable anti-tank weapons seem to be giving hell to the Russian armored forces. Again, we're hearing that tanks don't the era of the tank is over. How do you assess, and we only have about 30 seconds, but how do you assess what we've seen on the ground in the infantry battle in Ukraine, and how's that going to affect Israel's posture in the future?
Well, at the end, it's not. It's impressive what the Ukrainian forces have done with their anti-tank and anti-missile, anti-aircraft missiles. But at the end of the day, they're going to be overwhelmed by Russian firepower, certainly long-range firepower, air power. And as long as there's no military option in the West, Putin has all the time in the world just to keep wearing the Ukrainians down, to create millions and millions of refugees, to bomb cities to dust. He could take his time. So, you know, all the javelins and all the stingers in the world are not going to change that balance, I don't think.
Dr. Oren, I think that's a very savvy analysis, and I wish you and I had some more time to talk about it. But unfortunately, we're out of time on the Hugh Hewitt radio program for this hour. We got two more hours left. Give me a call, 800-520-1234. This is Kurt Schlichter singing for Hugh. Stick around. We're back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. That hardcore rock and roll from Black Flag can only mean one thing. Senator Jim Talent is joining us. We are not going to get into another debate about whether Black Flag was better before or after Henry Rollins jumped in, but I'd like to move right on to some military stuff. Senator Talent, welcome.
Thank you, Kurt, and I'm afraid I could not debate with you about the merits of Black Flag, so I'm glad you're not going there.
Well, Senator Talent, you're always one of my favorite guests because no one knows more about what's going on, both in the Senate politically and with America's military. And as a retired United States Army colonel, it was always great having fighters like you on our side in the Senate. And I know you're still fighting for us today. What has the Ukrainian scenario showed you and thinkers like yourself about how we need to reform our military, particularly our Army and Air Force, to take into account the technology of man-portable anti-tank missiles, man-portable anti-aircraft missiles, and other of those developments?
Yeah, it's a good point. And it's funny you asked me, referred to me as an expert in that. You were armored, weren't you?
No, so I was infantry, although I was a cavalry guy. It was coded for armor. It was coded infantry officer. And during the war, I watched trucks. So I was no Pete Buttigieg.
Right. Well, I had lunch actually yesterday with an old friend of mine who's former armored. And we had that discussion. What does this show about the vulnerability of armor? And his view preliminarily, which I think is mine, is that I don't know that it shows us very much because the way the Russians have fought this war, I mean, they haven't done, as you know, they haven't even done rudimentary combined arms tactics. So we don't know how vulnerable the armor would have been if they had, actually supported them with infantry, which
yep.
is sort of elemental, right?
Yes.
But I do think what it shows more generally is the importance of a stronger posture in Eastern Europe as deterrence. It's the old story, Kurt. I mean, again, it's kind of you to call me an expert, but most of this is really common sense. And Trump said it, and Reagan said it before him. You preserve the peace by being strong, which, in other words, you have a strong deterrent posture, deterrence by denial, not deterrence by punishment, which assumes the conflict has occurred. And then you prevent the aggressor from attacking in the first place. But you're very choosy about deploying America's armed forces, and particularly in prolonged combat, in wars of choice, right? I mean, Reagan and Trump were, I think, the two presidents, really, since I got involved in politics, who didn't start a war. But they also were the two who built up America's armed forces the most. So I think that's the policy to follow generally. And in terms of the Army, I think the Army has a mission, obviously, in Eastern Europe. One of the reasons we're in this situation is we drew down so far, and you know this, as of 2013, we didn't have a working tank in Europe. Well, yeah, Putin may have felt like we were not going to defend our interests.
Well, Senator Talent, what does the Ukrainian resistance to the Russian invasion in Ukraine, what lessons does it give for us and for the Taiwanese government regarding Taiwan?
Yeah, well, I think that what Taiwan needs to, what it shows is that you have to be thoughtful about how you're going to defend your country against the likely actual threat. So Ukraine's have targeted their capabilities so as to be able to deal with this kind of a conflict, and they've been very effective in doing it. Now, the Taiwanese need to do the same, which means really proliferating as much as possible on the island their asymmetric ability to target Chinese forces, and in particular Chinese ships. So they ought to get as much precision ordnance as they can, make it as mobile as they can to keep it from being vulnerable to Chinese attacks. And it counsels against really going out and trying to build submarines, for example. I mean, you know, a couple of submarines are not going to stop the Chinese, but a number of truck-mounted cruise missiles are really going to be a headache for them. And it also shows that the will to fight and making clear you have the will to fight is very important in deterring an aggressor.
Senator Talent, I remember those videos of Ukrainian forces handing out assault rifles, essentially AK family weapons, to citizens in Ukraine, many of them who had prior military training. Can you see the Taiwanese government leveraging its own citizenry through some additional training and, frankly, a Switzerland or Israel-like distribution of weapons, a decentralized distribution, to make, you know, essentially put a shooter behind every blade of grass and raise the cost to the PRC to invade? We have about 15 seconds left before I threw that hand grenade in the ring.
It's been an ongoing debate in Taiwan. It's heating up now. If you're going to do it, you have to really do it. You have to figure out what role you want them to play. You have to train and equip them to play that role. They did that in Ukraine. So you can't just hand out rifles and say, you know, go fight the enemy. You have to be thoughtful about it.
Well, thank goodness in America, many of us already have our rifles and our training, and we're ready to defend our country, our community, and our Constitution. Thank you, Senator Jim Talent, one of my favorite guests here on the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter. Stick around next hour. We've got some incredible stuff. Thank you, Hugh Hewitt. I always thought I would be the Charles Nelson Reilly of conservatism. That's the Charles Nelson Reilly of conservatism. All right, enough channeling of Dennis Miller. I am Kurt Schlichter, senior columnist for townhall.com. I am a author of the Kelly Turnbull series of conservative action novels, which you should get. Go pre-order right now. We'll be back, The Fall and Rise of America. We'll be back, The Fall and Rise of America from Regnery, which dovetails with my next guest, because I talk about the future of America, including elections. And, you know, I'm a trial lawyer. You may also know that I went to Las Vegas to work with Rick Grenell and some other folks after the election for election integrity. And one of the guys I worked with was one of the Republican Party's primary legal warriors. His name's Jesse Bennell, partner at the Bennell Law Group, B-I-N-N-A-L-L. Just in case you need help with electoral stuff. And if you do, you call Jesse. Jesse, how are you doing?
I'm doing great this morning, Kurt. How are you doing?
I have had 15 cups of coffee because I had to get up at 1 a.m. to do this. So I'm here in the Relief Factor studio in beautiful Southern California. But right after the election, I was in Las Vegas. And when I got a call from Rick Grenell while I was sitting at my favorite diner. He said, Kurt, we need you. And I'm like, I'm not an election law guy. He's like, we need all the law we can get. And I got there, and there was one guy already on the ground fighting the fight. It was you, and you brought your dog, and you were doing a great job, but it was only you. Were we prepared for the election fight after 2020?
You know, we really were not. We did, I think, everything we could. We did have some good people involved that were doing everything they could to get people on the ground. But there wasn't enough done really in the months and years before the 2020 election to give us a fair shot going into that fight. And quite frankly, there were some other lawyers involved that either didn't know what they were doing on one hand, or on the other hand, just completely gave up and ran away from the fight when the going got tough.
Yeah, look, I don't think we did the battle space preparation that we needed to. If you're fighting, look, I'm not an election lawyer, but I learned quickly. I was there for like 3 or 4 days, went home to change my clothes, had like a little cough, and then had COVID. Thank you, election 2020. Yep. But I did learn that election law is not designed to be won. It is a very, 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 very hard to win. It probably should be. You got to fight ahead of time. Are we preparing to fight ahead of time against some of the obvious misapplications of law, unlawful election law changes, and the like that caught us in 2020? Are we ready to fight those in 2022?
Yeah, that's the exact question we need to be asking right now, because now is the time to do it, not only for 2022, but 2024. There are some really good lawyers, myself included, some of my colleagues included, that are ready to get in and start throwing punches for the upcoming election cycles. My concern is whether the parties are going to take it a little bit more seriously this time. And so really, I think the important thing to do is for voters, you know, rank and file party members, just to make sure that the local parties, the state parties, and the national party understand that this is a key issue and that we have to put a sizable amount of resources in advance, not after everything's already, you know, blown apart at the end, but in advance in order to win these cases early.
Well, exactly, Jesse Bunnell of Bunnell Law Group. A lot of the results after the election were judges saying you should challenge this law before the voting even started. Why didn't you challenge this change, you know, 3 months ago? And it's kind of like, you know, you're like kind of pulling at your collar going, well, but that's when the fight has to begin.
Yeah, that's right. And judges are going to, you know, a lot of time do everything they can to tell you before the election, oh, you don't have standing, you don't have harm, and try to make an excuse if you go in before the election on one hand, and then, you know, after the election, they say, well, you're too late. And so, you know, part of that is we need to make sure the next time that we have a true conservative president in office, that we're getting really courageous judges. There's too many judges that just want to take the easy way out sometimes on tough cases. But the only way to win these cases is the same way that the Democrats fight them. And that is you go in early and you go in often, you go into all these districts. You try to find places where you're going to have friendly judges, even friendly defendants. For instance, election officials that that know that their arms have been tied and that the results are not going to be accurate with the system that they've been given. And if you kind of go in early with these cases, then you have a chance to actually make a difference. That's the way we need to fight it in the future.
Jesse Bunnell, do you see any evidence that the National Republicans are actually preparing the battlefield, that they're setting up both the network of attorneys and the resources necessary to challenge what will undoubtedly be some last-minute legal plays by the Democrats, probably because of the pandemic, which will suddenly appear in October once again? Have you seen any preparations?
Well, you know, there are really good groups out there like the Republican National Lawyers Association that they are putting together the network of lawyers that if we can get people to actually go in and do it in advance, can go in and fight these fights. Is it enough? I don't know about that. I think we need some real lawyers, some people that are familiar with going into the courtroom. And actually, Kurt, one of the things that you said just about yourself is what people need to know. And I'd really just make a plug to other lawyers like you. Even if you don't practice election law every day, the most important thing is to have lawyers that know how to go in, make an argument, and know how to throw punches.
Yes. Yes.
That's what we need. Get in there and do that.
Yeah, people don't understand. If you're a litigator, look, I don't know anything about real estate. But I can go try a real estate case because I can bring myself up and I know how to make an argument. I know how to talk to a judge. I know how to talk to a jury. People have given my clients millions of dollars because I've done that. But we also need guys like you who can go, well, you know, section 647D, which was revised last year, now says and instead of but. And that stuff's important. And one of the things one of the things that impressed me most about you personally is when I got to Las Vegas, I didn't lawyer much. I was doing operations. I actually switched into military mode and I was putting lawyers and trying to organize getting things done. A very prominent partner took your computer and sat in a corner and actually typed out stuff. Usually we have minions do that. You were doing it and it was good stuff. And I was very impressed by that.
Well, that's very kind. I was lucky that we had a really good core team in Nevada and we couldn't have done it without them. But it was an all hands on deck type of thing. And if this wasn't a moment where you could sit back and just rest on your laurels, hoping that there's going to be some associate in a building someplace to write your stuff. It was 24/7, 8 weeks. and loved every minute of it. But it was also exhausting. And if we're going to win these fights, we need people to understand that it's going to be long hours. And it's not always going to be glorious work. It's going to be sitting in the corner with a laptop punching out bleeding.
Which all of us have done that at some point. And, you know, maybe if we need to, we can do that again. But, to set the stage for the fight, you got to prepare in advance. And I'm a military guy. I'd like to see a chain of command. My question to somebody like Ronna McDaniel would be, Ronna, what is the name of the person who is in command of this effort? So if I call that person, him or her, he can go, here is the team that we have established for Atlanta or Milwaukee or Las Vegas. I don't know if that exists. Does that exist to your knowledge yet?
No, I really don't think that does exist.
That's bad. That's not good.
They have various people that they may use for Georgia work and for, you know, Nevada work and Pennsylvania work.
Yeah.
But do we have, you know, task force that are already in play for 2022 on this? I really don't think we do. You're absolutely right. That's what we need to be focused on.
Well, Jesse Bennell of the Bennell Law Group, a great election lawyer, a guy whose efforts impressed the hell out of me and guys like Rick Rennell and Adam Laxalt when we were fighting for election integrity in Las Vegas. Thanks for coming on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. I'm Kurt Schlichter. We got a lot more to come. Oh, that's the Blue Oyster Cult. Umlauts and all. I am Kurt Schlichter. Senior columnist at townhall.com. Retired United States Army colonel. Noted trial lawyer and author of the new book, We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America, which you must pre-order or Regnery will not release my family. We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America. Get it right now. Stop. Don't even listen. Just go get it. Just go get it as you listen to National Review and Morning Jolt's own Jim Garrity. Jim, welcome.
Kurt, it is always good to hear your voice. How are you? By the way, Regnery really is that tough. You know why the authors are always standing on the cover with their arms folded? It's because they're actually being tied up. It's from the straitjacket pose that you're usually in. So.
Yes, and sadly, the Eric Greitens autobiography did not work out. So, excuse me. Oh, I something caught in my throat at the mention of Eric Greitens. Let's talk about Greitens right at the top. You think that, loser is actually going to be nominated, or will the people of the Show Me State show that they're not literally insane?
I was going to say, I'm trying to think of comparable cases in which the Republican Party will have thrown away
Todd
an
Aiken.
Easy win.
Todd Aiken.
From the same state, Todd Aiken. Right? Yeah, you can find some other ones who might be debatable. Sharon Angle might not have been.
Well, look, I'll put it this way. The only way Greitens could come off worse is if he got on TV and said, I am not a witch.
Actually, here's the thing. Not even Christine O'Donnell like was kidnapping people. This is making us yearn.
I'm from California. If he was like, if he was here, you know, he'd be like, yeah, I'm into bondage, and
this
it'd be like a plus
choice. Yeah,
they'd be like, yeah, well, so's Dianne Feinstein, so you know, it's all even.
I'd like to think it sounds like it's close, which is unnerving. But I'd like to think that in the end, you know, any warm body will be a better choice than Greitens. And considering the otherwise, you know, the partisan lean of the state, that would look like an extraordinarily safe, you know, deep red seat.
Yeah, whoever wins, who is an Eric Greitens, wins the election. Eric Greitens goes in. Suddenly the voters are like, are you kidding me? And we could lose. I want to get to a subject that we've been talking about and the reason we had Godzilla as a bumper music. I want to see Godzilla fight Gamera. I want to see a primary involving Donald Trump, if he chooses to run, and Ron DeSantis, and any of the other conservative kaiju who decide that they want to, get on Monster Island and battle it out. What do you think of that? Do you think a not that you're necessarily for or against any particular guy, but don't you agree that a primary will sharpen and hone whoever is going to go up against whatever meat puppet they put up in place of Grandpa Badfinger in 2024?
Absolutely. No, I think the worst case scenario is that Trump says, I'm running, people, and all the other Republicans say, okay, I can't beat him, I'm out.
I don't think DeSantis can. I think this is DeSantis's time, and I think he's got to do it if he's ever going to do it. And boy, he's making quite a splash.
And there are a lot of other figures in the Republican Party who might make good presidents. Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, I like a lot. Tim Scott, senator from South Carolina. But they're all relatively young men, and they all could just as easily run in 2028, or who knows, maybe even 2032. None of these guys seems to be having, you know, age-related health issues or anything like that. They could say, okay, you know what, in one of those cycles ahead, I'm not going to be taking on an incumbent. DeSantis, on the other hand, look, he dominates the news cycle.
Oh, boy, does he ever.
Trump does. And I, by the way, I think is one of the things that fuels Trump's prickliness towards him is that Trump is used to being the center of attention. And over the last 2 years, with Trump out of office and not on Twitter, Ron DeSantis has become, in many ways, the media's public enemy Republican number one. And, you know, Trump looks at that and says, hey, wait, that's my job. You know, well, who is this guy? How dare he?
Well, Jim,
by the way, they're also living in the same state, which is even more ironic.
Jim Garrity of the Morning Jolt, which you should all subscribe to. Do you agree with me that probably the greatest shoot-your-own-foot move in political history in the last year or two was the blue tech titans thinking that they were going to damage Trump by taking him off Twitter?
I think there's definitely a case for that because, look, Trump on any given day would, you know, hop up and you know, re-watch the Fox News cryons or something and say, well, I'm going to buy Greenland today. And that was what we were talking about during that day.
God,
and
I miss
instead,
it.
Instead, you know, like here's the thing, like whether Trump realizes it or not, him not having the have built his alternative to Twitter, when he puts out his statements, they don't get nearly as much attention. So lo and behold, people are paying attention to what's going on in the country, things like inflation, things like food prices, things like gas prices, things like the disaster in Afghanistan, things like, you know, every couple of days, Biden says something, and the White House has to rush out and insist. No, actually, our policy.
Send the Easter Bunny out there to wrangle him.
It's a, you know, the easiest way in modern politics to win is to have the spotlight on your opponent. And, you know, this is why you began by mentioning Greetings. I don't have a ton of people who I'm rooting for in Republican primaries in this cycle. I have a bunch of people I'm rooting against because I think they would blow very winnable races.
Interesting. Real quick, simple yes or no. Do you think Trump runs in 2024?
Almost certainly. Extremely, extremely likely.
I swing back and forth on it. Again, much like Eric Greitens in different contexts. sometimes
you swing,
I think,
like a woman in his basement. Yeah,
wow, hanging from his apparatus.
We shouldn't laugh about this, but
no,
it's
I think we should. I think, look, as you know, I am not a dignified, oh well, I never kind of conservative. I like punching people in the face and watching them cry, and so does Ron DeSantis. And there's been a controversy, and I want you to weigh in on it. Ron DeSantis has was faced with a corporation using its massive cultural and economic power to enforce its view. Ron DeSantis fought back with the only kind of power that he has, which is political power. That is, he's able to go to Disney and say, you know, you're screwing with us. I'm going to take your privileges away from you because of it. And there is a debate in the conservative community. There are conservatives who say, we can't do that. That's not who we are. And there are guys like me. And I say, look, if you're going to use your power, I've got to use my power. I can't have arbitrary limits on my power because that just makes me a slave. And while David French may like it, I don't. How do you weigh in on that?
So my colleague Charlie Cook is about as big a fan of Ron DeSantis you're going to find.
Yes, he is.
But it doesn't mean he always thinks he's right. And in this case,
nor should he.
Basically, Charlie's view is that DeSantis already had this issue won. It was already backfiring on Disney. Disney was already looking like they'd been taken hostage by a bunch of lunatic extremists. This is just going for, and basically, this is a Dagwood sandwich of bad decisions. It was bad that the blue-haired, nose-ringed, you know, hard-left progressive employees of Disney forced one of the world's biggest companies to get into this fight. It was bad that Disney took this fight. Oh, by the way, we can make the argument in the abstract that the relationship between the Disney Corporation and the state of Florida basically had become symbiotic, and that actually we don't like these carve-outs for particular companies, and we prefer a level playing field. But this has existed for decades, and it's very clear that, you know, now DeSantis is like, oh, I think I've got a winning issue here. I'm going to press my advantage. I'm going to go even further against Disney. And you can make the argument that this is, on the one hand, it's not like they can transfer Disneyland or Disney World to some other state, right? You can't just suddenly, oh, we're gonna build a new Epcot up in New York State somewhere. We're gonna build, you know. So on the one hand, they've got that advantage. On the other hand, Florida is becoming a much more Republican state at the exact same time that at least a certain big chunk of Disney's creative class is going further and further to the left. Maybe this kind of rupture was inevitable.
Interesting. Look, I think Charlie Cook expressed the view, which I disagree with, very eloquently. He said it out, and he's got principle. Here's my thing. We are under attack by woke corporations who are using outside cultural power to support a partisan Democrat agenda. My question is, what is the alternative that allows us to fight for our own interests if the only power that we have is actual political power? What is the alternative? Yeah. You ask guys like David French, and all you get is mumble, drag queen story hour is a blessing of liberty, mumble. I am a trial lawyer and a retired United States Army officer. I was not trained to lose. And I see no conservative principle that I'll ever embrace that requires me to become a serf.
I guess the ideal outcome here is that what DeSantis is doing works as a shot across the bow.
Yes.
That it works as a deterrent, and that either through back channels or one way or another, the leadership of Disney, which has got no shortage of other real problems of, are we going to continue to be popular, recovery from COVID, people coming back traveling again. Theoretically, the stage is set for Disney to have a great, coming years. Do you really want to mess this up by going to war with the state of Florida? And does the state of Florida, which has a lot of things going well for it right now, does it want to mess everything up by going to war with the Disney Corporation? And that ideally, Disney says, you know what? We're going to go back to being family friendly. We're going to be kind. We're going to be non-controversial. We're going to stay out of the culture wars for a while. We're just going to stay home and make money. And if our employees on their own time want to be political activists, that's great. They go ahead and do it. But it's not our job of our corporation to weigh in and try to reshape American politics. That would be the ideal scenario, because I think in the end, you don't want to see Disney saying, that's it, we're going to relocate. We're shutting down. They're never going to shut down the
country. That ain't happening.
Not
in the cards. Hey, Jim Garrity, before we go, we only have about 15 seconds left. I just had Jesse Bunnell of the Bunnell Law Group, great Republican election lawyer, on the air. He says, hey, we don't have, as Republicans, an election law apparatus in place for 2022, much less 2024. What do you think of that? And we only got like 15 seconds.
Yeah. I'd rather have one than not have one.
Yeah, because it didn't work out so great last time. Jim Garrity, National Review Online. Get the morning jolt. I do. We're back on the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. I am guest host Kurt Schlichter, author of the new book, We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America, which you should go and immediately pre-order so that my publisher, Regnery, will release my family. I'm also a retired United States Army colonel, and during my years in service, many of them in the 40th Infantry Division, I had a chance to actually serve with my next guest, a military intelligence officer. He's now Vice President of National Initiatives and the Policy Director for the Election Protection Project at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. I know him as Major DeVore. You know him as Chuck DeVore. Chuck, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Good to be with you, Colonel.
Yeah, good to finally get together with you. We had basically a Biden administration level of antics trying to get you on, but here you are. And now that I've got you, I want you to put your Kevlar on for a second, and let's talk a little about Taiwan, which you're an expert on.
Yeah, that's I'm very concerned about Taiwan right now because of Biden's complete failure of being able to deter Russia from invading Ukraine. And, of course, the fiasco of the Afghanistan pullout. And you add those together and you look at the Biden administration's steadfast inability to make good decisions in a timely fashion. And the Chinese Communist Party might think that perhaps now is a good time to go.
Well, Chuck DeVore, one of the ways to make Taiwan a less attractive prospect to the communist Chinese is to toughen it up. The Ukrainians actually kind of showed us the way in a way. We saw that great footage of the Ukrainians handing out AK platforms, you know, assault rifles to regular citizens to allow them to fight. You know, if the residents of Taiwan were like, say, the Swiss or Americans, where people had ready access to weapons, wouldn't that make it a lot less of an attractive target than it is right now?
Yeah, exactly. Taiwan needs to present a myriad of difficulties for the People's Republic of China. They shouldn't simply rely on their Air Force to keep them safe and secondarily the Navy. They really need to get into creating a citizens' defense force. And the way I see it, you mentioned the Swiss, that's a good model. You know, something that would be on the lines of a local defense force where if an emergency happened, people would simply report to their local armory and they'd draw their weapons, including mortars and machine guns and anti-tank and anti-aircraft missiles. And they would present the Chinese with so many different threats that it would be very difficult to calculate the success in those opening critical days of a conflict. And part of the problem that Taiwanese have now is they just don't put a lot of effort into training the reserves. You know, they basically average 4 or 5 days a year.
Well, that's just not going to cut it. Chuck DeVore, when we were in the California Army National Guard together, we would have 24 days of drill, 14 days minimum of annual training, plus a lot of extra time. Plus, we'd be studying on our own. I mean, you know, guys like us, we did many of our courses on our own. You know, the whole what do we get a month, 2 weeks a year thing. Yeah, right. I wish the fact is, if you're going to have a serious citizenry based defense force, you have to have a serious training program. And it has to be a cultural commitment. In Switzerland, it's a cultural commitment. Everybody's in the reserve. In America, yeah, we have a lot of reservists. We also have a lot of people with privately owned weapons. Many of them know how to use it. And I'll tell you, if I'm a Chinese commander and I'm, you know, trying to move through Michigan, you know, I'm really worried about the guys in the area with 30-06s and scopes who know every rock and crevice from deer hunting. That provides a tactical problem that will slow down my movement, make resupply time. It just prevents this whole panoply of problems when you have an armed citizenry.
Right, and the nice thing about Taiwan from a defensive standpoint, it's a mountainous country. There's very thick forests, kind of a triple canopy jungle sort of arrangement, and then very densely populated urban areas that would be extremely difficult to take if they were adequately defended.
Well, you'd have to level it, essentially, which is what the Russians are doing.
Right, and look how long it's taken
yes.
to get to Mariupol, right? And just today, Vladimir Putin said, well, we're not going to storm the last bit of it. We're just going to seal it off. So, you know, there's an admission as to how costly it is to storm determined defenders in an urban setting.
Do the Taiwanese have a culture, and I only got about 15 seconds left, do they have a culture that would lend itself to a decentralized citizen-based resistance force to supplement
military?
Yeah,
they're moving in that direction. They're moving in that direction, but they have a ways to go.
Well, thanks, Chuck DeVore of the Texas Policy Foundation and a retired United States Army officer I served with. My name's Kirk Schlichter. I want you to get my book. We'll be back, The Fall and Rise of America. Please, so they'll release my family. I will see you again Tuesday, tomorrow. Ed Morrissey will be back covering Smith songs along with Hugh Hewitt from a boat in Paris or France. Or both. I'll see you on Tuesday. Adios.
three-star general, Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.